Current State on 90.5 WKAR. A federal appeals court recently ruled that internet service providers can give preference to some content and even block it if they choose. The net neutrality case has received a great deal of attention since the ruling. It's a complicated issue, and here to help us untangle some of the threads is Kendall Koning. Kendall's pursuing a dual degree in law and telecommunication, information studies, and media here at Michigan State and at the MSU College of Law. Welcome to Current State, Kendall.
Thank you.
First of all, explain, just in basic terms, what is the concept of net neutrality?
Well, net neutrality is the idea that the people who control the network, the internet service providers, should not be making decisions for users about what content to block or what applications to favor or discriminate against.
And why are people concerned about this ruling? What would be the impact of that changing definition or that change in net neutrality?
Okay, so some of the concerns are that, you know, those things that are prohibited might start happening. So it's not likely that the ISPs will start to block services right away. I think the backlash that you would see from the public for something like that
ISP, internet service provider, Verizon and Comcast,
they're not likely to do that at all. What you're likely to see is more of the relationships on the back end might change a little bit. So, you know, for example, an application provider might pay for priority access to the network that you know, their competitors wouldn't necessarily be able to receive.
How did the judges explain their ruling exactly?
Well, the ruling at the D.C. Circuit wasn't really about whether network neutrality is a good idea. So the D.C. Circuit's role is a little bit different than that. So, you know, the actual ruling depended on some administrative law details and how the FCC went about that regulation. It's not really tied. The problem is that it's not really tied to the federal statutes, the federal telecommunications statutes, the way that those statutes are written. The FCC relied on a different jurisdictional provision in order to justify these rules. And in doing so, it ran afoul of some explicit rules in the statute where the FCC can regulate, but only within the text of the statutes, right?
Well, one concern is that the Verizons and the Comcasts could start charging people more money, both to receive content and to put it out on the web. I want to clarify here. Do you think that will happen?
It's likely to happen on the back end, I think.
Tell us again what you mean by that, on the back end.
The relationship between the internet service providers and the people providing content, the Googles, the Facebooks, the Netflixes, you know, the applications, those are those internet application providers are different from the internet itself. We're only talking about these FCC rules only apply to the network infrastructure that connects users and these other providers.
Now, is there any kind of precedent in the way the cable TV companies can charge you more based on what channels you get?
I've seen an infographic online going through that. I think that's you know, that kind of scenario is pretty unlikely to happen right away, just because of the reaction that consumers would have to that.
This situation did get compared to different charges that utilities sometimes charge their customers. For example, someone who water sometimes, the use of water sometimes is assessed at different rates depending on how you use that water. Is that a legitimate comparison here?
Yeah, I think so. The concern is that that might be done for, say, perhaps reasons that are anti-competitive. So an example would be that if you subscribe to the Netflix video service, and in some ways that competes with, say, Comcast's own video and cable service. And so, for example, if Comcast imposes a bandwidth cap on how much bandwidth you're allowed to use on your internet connection, and they make Netflix is subject to that, those bandwidth restrictions, but say Comcast service isn't, or someone who pays Comcast isn't, you know, subject to those same restrictions, that could be, you know, kind of a problem with the internet service providers who have a lot of market power. There are really only two in any given area, to kind of extend that market power into other markets for services.
Mm-hmm. Writing in the New Yorker, Tim Wu says that restoring the FCC's longstanding authority here to resolve this issue, quote, is much simpler than it appears. Wheeler, and referring here to FCC Commissioner Tom Wheeler, needs only to reaffirm that broadband is a telecommunications service, meaning that the FCC has the authority to regulate it. Is it that simple?
Yeah, and that's really the heart of the issue. For many years, the FCC has maintained a regulatory position that's really hard to justify when you look at what's technologically happening behind the scenes. I think the statute defines telecommunications as a transmission of information of the user's choosing without any change in the form of that or content of that information. And if you look at, you know, actual internet protocol packets going between, say, your computer at home and an application provider like Facebook, those packets are bit for bit exactly the same. There's no translation. There's no new information there. And that's the only way it can work with certain types of technology. For example, encryption wouldn't work unless the network worked that way. So this definition of telecommunications, the internet really matches it, but the FCC has made different decisions. They've held that the internet is a information service rather than a telecommunications service. And this kind of fundamental conflict between what the internet kind of actually is, if you look at it from an engineering perspective or how it works, and how the FCC regulates it, is kind of that's the conflict that's come back. And so what's happening in the network neutrality rules is that the FCC has imposed those non-discrimination, non-blocking obligations. Those are the rules that have historically been applied to common carriers, like the telephone company. And the problem with the open internet order and why the court had to strike it down was that the statutes also say that firms are not to be treated as common carriers except to the extent that they're providing telecommunications mm-hmm. services.
Okay. So that gets right to the heart of the issue right here.
That's exactly why the D.C. Circuit struck it down.
What do you anticipate? What do you, Kendall, think will be the next chapter in this issue of internet neutrality?
It's really hard, I think, to predict what's going to happen at the level of the FCC. So the D.C. Circuit pretty clearly invited them to do the reclassification of the internet as telecommunications. It's pretty clear when you look at the technology. There's a very, very strong argument there. But at the same time, the ISPs are quite powerful politically. They have large lobbying budgets. And so exactly what happens there will probably be a subject of robust debate in that community for some time to come.
Given what you're studying here at Michigan State University, this would seem to be something that you are probably paying very – you're obviously paying very close
yes.
attention
yep.
to this.
Thing. Yep. I have a law review article I'd like to get published in this next cycle that deals with a lot of these issues.
Very interesting. Kendall Koning is a student here at the MSU College of Law and as well at the Media Communication and Informations Department here at the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State. We've been talking about net neutrality. Kendall, thank you.
Thank you.